That's the composition Our Great Mikado. It's from Gilbert and Sullivan's light opera, The Mikado. The Seattle Gilbert and Sullivan Society is currently staging a production of The Mikado, but one local critic called it a yellow-faced staging. It was written 130 years ago, and it's one of Gilbert and Sullivan's most popular productions. The comic opera is set in Japan as a way to poke fun at British politics and morals. It's filled with fans and kimonos, swords, and white actors dressed up as Japanese characters. Josephine Lee is an English and Asian American professor at the University of Minnesota. She wrote the book The Japan of Pure Invention, The Racial History of Gilbert and Sullivan's The Mikado. She explained to Jeannie Yandel why The Mikado is considered offensive.
It's having a kind of Japanese setting makes it even more, say, exotic and whimsical. And so what becomes interesting, and I think sometimes a little disturbing, is people excuse the Mikado and say, well, it really has nothing to do with Japan. It's all about England. But I think then the question arises, if it really has nothing to do with Japan, why not just take all the Japanese references out? Why does it have to be about this fictional town of Tidipu, this despotic emperor, the Mikado? Why does it have to be have these references to Japan as this kind of fantastical and sort of, in some ways, very primitive place, a place where one is punished by death for the act of flirting, which is what the opera is premised on.
Do you buy the argument that the Mikado is more about England than Japan?
You know, I think absolutely. If you research the history of the opera, it's really tied up with the interest in Japan. I don't buy at all that this was just a convenient setting. I think that Gilbert and Sullivan both kind of took it on themselves to call this a Japanese opera. So if you research the history of the opera, one of the ways in which they advertise the opera in its 1885 version was to say, this is authentic Japanese. These are authentic Japanese costumes. We observed people, Japanese people. And, you know, obviously, Gilbert and Sullivan capitalized on the interest in Japanese people and Japanese things. But they did it in such a way that created a very silly portrayal of anything Japanese. So no, I don't buy the idea that having it in Japan is secondary. I think it's crucial to the opera. And I think it's also a very convenient way of finding a safe fantasy land to make some commentary on ridiculous people. So it becomes a sort of convenient target or maybe a scapegoat in that way.
There's a connection to the Mikado and blackface. What is that relationship?
Actually, there are several threads here. One is that blackface minstrelsy as a kind of American export was extremely popular in Britain, and both Gilbert and Sullivan were, I think, to some extent influenced by blackface minstrelsy, which they would have seen on London stages. I think also when Mikado came to the United States, and again, there was a lot of controversy because D'Oyly Carte wanted to preserve their copyright and their Savoy Opera version as the authoritative and definitive version, but they lost to the American pirates. You know, these sort of bootleg versions of the Mikado were rampant and went all over the United States. And some of these versions were done by blackface minstrel companies, right? They did takeoffs on the Mikado because it was such a popular opera. So I think it's an interesting and complicated history in which blackface sort of intertwines with yellowface, and you have white artists who are playing in blackface minstrelsy who are doing yellowface as well. Later on, I think it's also an interesting sort of 20th century history. Later on, you have some very interesting and politically loaded African-American companies doing the Mikado. And I think one of the most famous of these is the Negro unit of the Chicago Federal Theater Project in 1938 did a version of the Mikado called the Swing Mikado. And this was a kind of jazzed up version of the Mikado in which African-American actors played all the roles. And so when you have a kind of multicultural, as it were, Mikado, the politics get even more complicated and more interesting.
Given the fact that there is this intertwined relationship between blackface and yellowface because of the Mikado, Why is it that blackface has died out, whereas yellowface really hasn't?
Well, I think some of it has to do with the kind of activist politics that have taken place, you know, since the civil rights movement, that there has been a real shift in attention to thinking about how African Americans are represented. And so we have a lot of racial issues in the United States that are defined along black-white lines. I think Asian Americans have been in some ways much less visible on the political stage. I think in part because the history of Asians in America has to do with exclusion and marginalization, that since the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act, there have been a series of laws preventing Asians from coming to the United States and becoming naturalized citizens. Because of that, there's been a smaller Asian American population, which has only increased since the repeal of those laws in 1965 and after. And I think that since the liberalization of the immigration laws, there's been much more attention to what are the racial formations that surround Asian Americans in the United States. And these are formations that, again, were not just created since the 1960s, but that have been in place, you know, for 150 years. And so I think some of the representations of Asians have gone really unremarked upon and unnoticed until maybe the past couple of decades, when people have said, hey, you know, this is a stereotype that we're looking at. You know, it may be a very old stereotype, but that doesn't mean it's any less offensive.
Since you pinpointed the last couple of decades as a time when people started noticing that these are offensive stereotypes that are being portrayed, how has the staging of the Mikado changed over the last 20 years, or has it?
Japanese producers and opera companies have taken up the opera in all kinds of interesting ways. And I think some of them have been kind of playing upon the fact that this opera has a checkered history. And that's been true in the United States as well. There have been a number of theater companies that have played with the text of the opera. I think a number of years ago, Lodestone Opera did a piece called The Mikado Project, in which they skewered the opera and its politics and the way in which it's usually cast by white actors, and what does it mean for Asian American actors to participate in this. And then last year in the Twin Cities, Moon Performing Arts, which is an Asian American theater company, collaborated with Skylark Opera, and they rewrote the Mikado to take out the references to Japan and did it as kind of, again, a satire on Britain, but with Asian American leads.
And you were actually involved with that production in St. Paul.
Yes, I was the dramaturg. You know, I was asked to dramaturg the production by Rick Shiomi, who was the director and also who rewrote the libretto, and he did a wonderful job. And when he asked me, I said, Rick, I have seen so many productions of this opera. I've written a book about this opera. Do you really think I want to see it again? But I really was delighted at what they did. I thought it was extremely refreshing, and it added another level about who gets to represent who, because the issues of yellowface have to do with the fact that for centuries it's been white actors who determine what these characters who are supposed to be Asian look like, sound like, act like. And so I think in some ways to have Asian American actors playing British characters is a nice twist on this old equation.
That's Josephine Lee, an English and Asian American professor at the University of Minnesota. She spoke to Jeannie Yandel about the Mikado. The Seattle Gilbert and Sullivan Society's staging of the Mikado has been criticized because it doesn't feature any Asian American actors. To hear about that, check out Bill Radke's conversation with Roger Tang, a Seattle producer and playwright. You can hear that interview on our website. Just search for Week in Review.